Amen. All right. I hope that was a blessing. Okay, I hope we have some new powerful ways to understand chapter 2, especially verses 8 and 9. Okay? So, because people will come to me and say, but these verses are such a problem for me because you don't understand them. So hopefully maybe now you can understand them. Okay, and I praise Yah. There was years when I just used to have to skip over that stuff because I didn't understand them. I didn't know what to do with them. I never thought that they meant whatever Christianity said. I just didn't know what to do with them. And praise Yah, he's been giving me a way through context to understand what it actually is probably. And I say probably because only Paul really knows what he was saying. But I think we're getting closer to likely what he was talking about. Amen? Amen. All right, so this is called the afterburn. So if you got comments, questions, thoughts, etc., you'd like to come up to the mic. We have a mic stand up here. We also have those of you online. We've got our Shamash team in the back there. Looks like we have actually four of our five Shamashes all back by the table. So, and then of course, Shamash Steve is up here with the mic, so all of you are there. And so actually that's pretty good. Today we've got all the Shamashes in one room, okay? Everybody's together today. All right, so we'll begin with Sarah Beth.
Shalom, Rabbi.
Shalom.
In reference to what you were just talking about with the regathering, I'm hoping I had a light bulb moment, and I'm hoping it's accurate, and I'm putting all the pieces together. You talked about he would find us in the process of finding the scattered Israelites.
Right.
So my thought was, so the Israelites were supposed to be a light to the nations, right? They were supposed to live out the Torah in front of the world, right? So they wouldn't be the light that Abba wanted, so he used them as a light anyway to gather all of us.
Yes. Okay. Look, this is one of those things that it's got simplicity to it, but we could easily kind of think that we're just less. I don't want you to think of ever being less. In other words, well, if I'm really not an Israelite, it doesn't matter. A lot of Israelites are not going to hear the call. But you are. So what difference does it make? And you look at some of the heroes throughout Scripture, they were assimilated in. Especially when you even look at the spies, when they spied out the land. It doesn't matter. I mean, look at Ruth. Okay? Ruth is in the lineage of David HaMelech, King David. She's a Moabitess. At least she was. And then she changed. So don't ever be concerned about, I'm not as good because I wasn't. It doesn't mean anything. And Paul tries to say that in a lot of his letters. It doesn't matter. What matters is the choices you make. It doesn't matter what you were born. Okay? All right, Ashley.
I just wanted to come up here and you were talking about gathering the lost sheep and you got me to go down a couple of rabbit trails. All this time when I was growing up in early adulthood until a couple years ago, I was always told I was a black sheep. And coming here, sometimes I still feel like I'm a black sheep. But what happened if all of us, and I'm not the only black sheep here, what happened if we're not the black sheep, but we're the perfect unblemished ones and everyone else is the black sheep?
Okay, that's an interesting question. Look, think of us all as unblemished sheep that have been playing in the mud so we're very dirty. And Yeshua hoses us down little by little. Actually, worse than that, he scrubs us down. So it's not enjoyable necessarily. Sometimes those rough spots he has to scrub pretty hard, okay, to get the blemishes out. Okay? All right, Janet?
You were talking about on 2:12. When you were talking about, we're able to become, we didn't have anything, we were dirt, but then we have Messiah, and through Messiah, you laid out the whole process. Somehow I went to Matthew, to the Beatitudes, 5:9.
Somehow, you just turned left from Ephesians.
So when it says, where is that?
Matthew what?
5:9.
Okay.
When it says,
blessed are the peacemakers?
Yes. And then it says, because they should be called sons of Elohim. So when we partake on the citizenship, is that kind of like him adopting us and becoming sons of Elohim? How is that related to us being like peacemakers? Is that the peace, that the barrier that he broke can you enlighten? And
yeah, no, I think you actually picked a verse that connects very nicely, because look, he says that he is our peace, right? It's part of what it talks about in verse 14 of Ephesians, right? For he is our peace and he's made both one. So he's saying, blessed are those who went, because remember, he can make peace and we can keep warring and keep fighting and keep striving. But he said, blessed are the peacemakers. In other words, the people who, when he makes peace available, that you make peace with Elohim and with each other, you will be the ones called children of Elohim. So it's a perfect connection, beautiful connection. You're welcome. All right, Shamash Steve.
All right, I don't know if I had this right, so correct me and then we can bring it forward. But we talked just Tuesday about Deuteronomy 8:2 and being human, how he humbles us. Is humbleness equal us being able to experience gratitude? Because in our humility, we're able to have the gratitude that he's going to offer as the gift, as you put, of eternal life. But without him humbling us, so how does Deuteronomy 8:2 fit into what you just did today?
Well, I don't know that we're catching the humbleness part. It does to some degree when he's talking about, look, you know, this is not something you can boast about. You didn't earn it. Okay? But the humbleness really is just to get you to see that you're not right, but there's a way to get to be right. And when we're not humble, we can't see that. Okay? When you deal with prideful people, you can't show them that they're wrong. They can't receive it. It takes humility to be able to receive correction. Then you can make the correction if you can receive it, right? So that humility says, I led you through this wilderness so that you can learn to be humble enough to receive correction and to look up for all, to trust up the above for all. Okay, so you need to look at it from that sort of perspective, absolutely. All right, so let's just keep that in mind that when we're looking at this, you know, Deuteronomy 8:2 says that he led them through the wilderness to humble them, to test them, to prove what's in their heart. That's a part of the process between you were dead in your trespasses, I poked your bubble, and then we get to Deuteronomy 8:2. And now you're going to go through this journey of becoming humble enough to receive everything and to make the adjustments to prove it's in your heart to do these things. So it kind of fits in that middle of that. Okay, Chris?
Okay, I had a connection between Ephesians 2, verse 8. So, for by favor you have been saved through belief, and that not of yourselves is the gift of Elohim. It is not by works, so that no one should boast. I connected that to Judges chapter 7. And in chapter 7, verse 2, Yahweh says to Gideon, the people who are with you are too many for me to give Midian into their hands, lest Israel boast against me, saying, my own hand has saved me. And so there's the connection between salvation and boasting. And the connection between that and belief, it says, by belief also you are saved. Well, the next verse you have, and now proclaim in the hearing of the people, saying, whoever is afraid and trembling, let him turn back. If you have belief, you'll actually respond to the call, and otherwise, you'll be afraid. And so, I thought that was something of significance in the Tanakh, and saying that Paul's not just coming up with this.
Yeah. No. Absolutely. Look, you can see those situations. It's like, look, hey, Gideon. You got 20,000, whatever. You're going to sit there going, well, of course we won. We had more people than they did. We were a bigger army. We didn't need Elohim for anything. So then eventually it gets down to 300. It's okay. Now you're going to go and we'll see and show that you were way outnumbered and you still won because it was Elohim, not you. Okay? So a lot of that really is about the same thing here. It's like, look, if I had this be something that you could look at and point to that somehow you did it, then you'll never realize the vertical component necessary to really go through the journey.
Okay, and my question was kind of taking this into my daily life. So if I'm doing the commandments, right, because that's what I usually focus on, but if I do that without the understanding that Ephesians is giving you, that it's by Yahweh first, how would that impact a person's walk? Can you still do the commandments? I mean, obviously I wouldn't do it that way, but how exactly would it be a problem? It would be, but like how does it affect you, I guess? And how would that, how does that impact your walk in a negative way if you don't have that understanding?
But you're still doing though.
Yeah, like, I mean, you'd be doing the commandments, I guess, but like, this is like, I guess more like the Pharisees, but like, is it, I mean, you wouldn't really do the commandments without the understanding that you've been given. I understand that, like, if, I mean, Yahweh created me, so obviously I didn't create myself. And so it doesn't make any sense to me, but I wanted to think about, like, how could I be missing the mark on in my walk, even if I'm keeping the commandments, if I'm not understanding this part in Ephesians?
All right, well, there's several elements to the, I guess, the flow of the process, right? I mean, when Yahweh took them to the mountain, he said, look, I'm going to give you a covenant that says, if you do everything I say, I'll take care of everything else, Exodus 19. And he hadn't told them what was included yet. He just said, you know, if you agree, it's going to all work out. Then he expected, as he told them what to do, that they would just do it. And in doing comes understanding, okay? And so if you are blocking that flow from the doing to the understanding because you're not paying attention, you should be aware. I'm doing this. I don't know why. I don't have a motivator and everything, but I'm going to do it because he said so. But be aware that through doing it, your expectancy is I'm going to start to understand it through doing it. That I will get inspired and it will be revealed to me some of the insight necessary to understand why I'm doing this, why it's important. But until I know, I'm still going to do it. See, I got too many of you. One is too many. So when I say too many, I don't want you to think it's a big number. But I still have too many of you coming up to me saying, well, you know, I really don't understand that, so I'm not doing it yet. And I always answer the same way. I don't understand why understanding it has anything to do with it. What does that have to do with anything? Did he say it? Yes. Do you believe him? Yes. So do it. I mean, I can't answer why there are still men in this room that don't wear tzitzit. Except pride, ego, something. Don't tell me you don't understand it, because understanding is irrelevant. He said to do it, period. Okay, but there's a lot of you still don't do it. I don't know why. But you need to figure that out. Am I judging you? No. Do I really care? No. I'm not going to waste a lot of my emotional energy trying to figure out why you're not doing something. But that's your problem to figure out. But it has to do with, again, asking the question. This is the awareness I'm telling Chris about. Be aware of what it is you're doing, how you feel about it. And if you're not feeling about it the way you think you should, but you're doing it just out of obedience, then be open to eventually receiving that insight down the road. Not the first time you do it necessarily, although it could happen, but that your expectancy is always, I'm going to keep doing this, whether I understand it or not, with the belief and trust that I'll understand it at some point. It'll make sense to me at some point. Right now it makes sense simply because he said it, I'm doing it. That part is at least simple enough. All right, Mercy?
So I had an epiphany, and I remember when I was in Christianity, and I remember citizenship kept coming up within me. I'm not going to say that it was an audible voice or anything. I'm just going to say that, you know, citizenship kept coming up. And I really didn't understand it. So I kept saying, okay, because I would read it and I'm like, okay, great, you know, I get it, blah, blah, blah. And one day I said, okay, what does citizenship actually mean? What does that mean? You want me to be a citizen of your kingdom? And I remember saying to myself, okay, so if I just take this practically, anyone who wants to become a citizen of the United States, what do they generally have to do? Well, they have to study, you know, the history of the United States. They have to figure out what the laws are of the land. They have to then denounce where they come from and accept whoever the authority and the sovereign is of this particular land. And I remember saying, oh, well, that's so simple. And, you know, it just seemed so ethereal before, but it seemed really simple. So I'm thinking, all right, well, let me start with one. Let me start studying. So I'm studying the word, thinking that I am on my way to becoming a citizen. However, the part that I didn't understand was that second part, which is you have to obey the laws of the land, which I didn't understand until having gotten into this walk. Because now I'm understanding the law of the land, which is the don't eat pork. Doesn't matter if you like a pork chop, don't eat pork. That means that you have to do what he says and worship him on the day that he chooses or the days that he chooses, Moedim. It doesn't matter what you think because you're now wanting to be engrafted in to this land, this kingdom, and you have to obey the rules and the laws of the land. So I find it really interesting that now I am on that trajectory to becoming a citizen because now I'm understanding and learning the laws of the land, which I just thought in Christianity, oh, it was just about studying. Oh, I'm just studying. And yes, I understand the part about denouncing. I get that. Okay, I'm not going to do the worldly things anymore, and I'm just going to do what you tell me to do. But what are you telling me to do? I'm not going to know what you're telling me to do until I know what your laws are. So I find that really interesting. So when you started, we started going over Ephesians and we started hitting that citizenship portion, it was like, okay, now I'm actually learning what I need to learn to become a citizen of his land at that appointed time when I'm going to be tested. That final test that everyone has to go through before they can actually say their declaration of being a United States citizen. So I just wanted to say thank you because that was a kind of amazing. So thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome. And look, I didn't cover those last couple of verses very extensively as we finished up so that I could do them extensively next week. No. So because it's covered already in the identity teaching, discovering your identity teaching. But the very critical piece of this is that you have to have that light bulb go off and recognize that it's about citizenship. It's not about the color of your skin. It's not about your gender. It's not about where you were born. It's not about your genealogy. It's not about how smart you are. It's about citizenship. And it's a citizenship by choice. Okay? It sounds like there should be an exam for this or something. And there is. Okay? And yes, I will be bringing it out for you guys to have fun with at some point. And no, don't ask me for it. That's just for those of you that are immediately going to start emailing asking for it. No. And don't think it doesn't exist. You can ask Uncle Bob. He's seen it. I did this over the last 20 years, two or three times at the feast and that kind of thing. I just have to, now with so much more that I've taught over the last, 15 or 20 years, I want to tweak it, update it. I haven't really looked at it. I think the last time we did it was at the Mountain Lake Ranch at Sukkot, six, seven, 8 years ago. I mean, a long time ago, maybe more. I mean, I can't remember the last time we used it. So that being, does anybody here remember? I know you were with me long enough to go back and do it. Rabbi Tom has his hand up. Okay, my wife did still, okay. So she remembers the test. So it must have been since Rabbi Tom's been with us, but you've been with us a long time. So, but I think it was at the Mountain Lake Ranch that we did it a long time ago at a Sukkot. So I do have this exam, and it covers kind of the things that Mercy was talking about, things that you should know as a citizen. Because if you come here, my wife had to take an exam like that when she came, that, to be able to say that you understand these things when her family moved here, and that you understand to be a citizen, you have to know certain things. There's an expectation. And so, yes, I will have that for you, and we'll enjoy that. Now, some of you are already panicking, thinking, can we get some sort of heads up what's on it so we can study? No. See, I told this to my children. You should tell this to your children, too, if they're being homeschooled or in public school. Grades are grades, whatever. Who cares? But the thing is, a test is very vital, not only to figure out what you know, but what you don't know. Because when you figure out what you don't know, then you can go and figure out how to fix that, what you don't know. And so I know that teachers often, if they're good teachers, will give a test not to just give a grade, but it'll help them know what they need to be focusing more attention on. If most of the class didn't understand a particular thing and they all got it wrong on the test, maybe that's the teacher's fault. And by the way, if I'm the supervisor over the teachers, like a principal, if I see that everybody in that class or the majority got a certain item wrong on a test, I'll blame the teacher, not the students. If one person got it wrong, maybe the student didn't pay attention. But if most of them got that wrong, that means the teacher dropped the ball somewhere in communicating the information, because they all got it wrong, okay? And so I want to give you this exam initially when I do, without preparation, just to see your reaction to it and how, you know, it inspires you to go gather. Then we may do a retake of the exam when you have a chance to study it the second time. But I don't want to just give it to you because I don't want you to cram for the test. I want you to see how much you know and don't know that I at least believe you should know. Okay? Is that fair? So it's more of an evaluation for you. It's a self-assessment. Not going to be graded. Matter of fact, I'm not going to collect them. It's for you. Okay? So I don't care what you knew and what you didn't know. It's for you to say, wow, I actually knew that. That was pretty cool. I probably should know that. Why don't I know that? You know? And so there's going to be things that you're going to be like, there won't be anything on there that will be like, what's that? It may be things like, I know I should know that. Why can't I just, I mean, you know, because it's things that maybe you didn't pay enough attention to. Is that fair? Okay. Because I've already been accused of not having such an exam or just I'm rushing to go. It exists. Okay. It's been used several times. I just don't know, having not looked at it in a long time, if it actually even represents everything that I want it to say now. Is that fair? Because easily it's been, I guess if Rabbi Tom Kramer, it's been at least 8 years or so ago. I mean, I would say easily. That's a long time ago. All right, well, that being the case, I may want to relook at it before we give it to anybody. So, everybody be ready for a pop quiz at any moment. All right. Anxiety levels just went to like, you know. Take out your pencils. Elder Billy, go to my office, grab the exam. No, kidding. Okay. I do have it actually on my desk. So, or somewhere, you know, so I can review it. I did pull it out and print it out. I showed it to him, so he knows it exists. Okay, and I'll be working on it. Okay, so over here with Isaiah. And then after Isaiah, we'll go to live stream.
Thank you. So in Deuteronomy 9, I love how you pointed out that how they possessed land not by what they merited at all. They didn't. Moses pointed out how stiff-necked they were, and they were essentially, that was their salvation by unmerited favor situation. I love how you compared that to Ephesians 2, 8, and 9. There's always been abused. And I've never heard Ephesians taught out of full context, rightly dividing the whole word. So, but the way in like verse 8, I made a little note, out of Yeshua's merited favor, we have the chance to partake of his fruit. And so I was brought to Deuteronomy 26. And I wonder if this is like a picture of this or what I'm thinking, if at all. Like 1 through 5, basically. And it shall be when you come into the land which Yahweh your Elohim is giving you as an inheritance, and you possess it and dwell in it, you shall take some of the first fruits of all the fruits of the soil which you bring from the land to Yahweh, your Elohim, to the land that Yahweh, your Elohim, is giving you, and shall put it in a basket and go to the place where Yahweh, your Elohim, chooses to make his name dwell there. And you shall come to the one who, and the priest of those days, and say to him, I shall declare today to Yahweh, your Elohim, that I have come to the land which Yahweh swore to our fathers to give us. Kind of like a process, like out of Ephesians, we get taught so much, like, you know, it's out of relationship. We're called into a relationship by nothing we did. We couldn't have ever earned it, but it's not.
Right.
This seems like the exercising of the relationship, or like a shadow of that or something like that to me. So, I don't know.
No, I appreciate that. Look, one of the things that we have in Deuteronomy 26 is very much even like in Matthew when we have the model prayer. So this is a model of the expectation that when you go to do these things, you bring this to the right person in the right place, and you also declare, I come from, because if you go further in, it says, look, my father was a perishing Aramean, and we went down to Mitzrayim, and we sojourned. So I know where I come from. I was a slave in Egypt. I don't deserve anything, but I've been blessed with what I have. This is the first fruits of it, and this declaration that you're going to make, that look, you know, we didn't mess with it, we didn't do anything with it. In verse 14, And some of you do that now. Some of you come to me and just say, look, or write it on your tithe envelope, whatever. Just write, you know, this has been watched over, not messed with, all those kind of things. It's a process. You know what? I think if we did require people as members of this part of the body to tithe in this way, the tithing would be very different. If you were required to step up before the priest, so to speak, and to make a declaration, and then it would be very obvious if you'd never stepped up with, you know, to the priest to make a declaration that you're having either a financial problem, which could be the problem, or a selfishness problem, or some other Torah-related problem, vertical problem, because you're not doing it. But imagine if you not only put the money, you know, sometimes you just say, I'll just put $5, I'll put whatever it is. Or is it tithe? Are you tithing? Then you'd have to declare that you've not messed with it. An offering, there's nothing to say I didn't mess with. It's coming out of your heart. But if it's tithing, that's not yours. You can't mess with it. Imagine having to declare, you know, maybe you should just write that on the envelope that says, if you're going to tithe, you are declaring by this tithe that you've not messed with it. And then sort of have you sign off on that. And it's not because we want any more money here. It's just this is what he's talking about here, that you have a responsibility between you and him, that it's between you and him, and to declare, I have not done anything with this that I shouldn't do. He says, verse 13, I put away your set apart portion from my house. I gave it to the Levite, etc. I've not eaten any of it in mourning, verse 14, or removed any of it for unclean use, or given any of it for the dead. I've obeyed the voice. Maybe your tithing might be a little different at that point. Okay? Maybe you'd think about, am I tithing on the gross or the net, or do I need to be messing with that just because I'm trying to keep more money in my pocket? Every effort you make to keep more money in your pocket from giving it to him like you're supposed to, well, like you're supposed to, I'm not saying just being generous, etc., is only going to take money out of your pocket. I'm just saying that. Believe it or not, I don't care. Those of you know what I'm saying and know it's the truth. Anything you do to keep more in your pocket and not give him what his is going to take money out of your pocket. Any effort to give him more than maybe you were supposed to just to be sure that you're not will put more money in your pocket. Because it's being that maximalist and it will bless you. This isn't name it, claim it, whatever, prosperity gospel. It's simply saying that that's the way it works in my experience watching people. And I tell people all the time, anything you do to mess with what he says financially only hurts you. Doesn't hurt me. Doesn't hurt him. Only hurts you. Okay? Please talk to each other and hear the testimonies of people that will tell you how excited they are about how their life financially has worked and changed when they started doing these things. All right? It's tremendous, the stories you're going to hear. And then you have people that you look at them funny, like they're like talking about, my third tithe year starts this year. I've never had one before. This is so great. And you're thinking, that scares me to death. Why does it scare you to death? You should be excited about it because something amazing is going to happen and you're not going to understand it because somehow it's going to work when you can't make it work now with two or one. Now you're going to do three? But it's going to... You'll be inspired to another job. You'll be inspired to different work. You'll be inspired to fix some of your spending. You'll be, something will happen, and at the end of the year, you'll be like, I have no idea how that happened. It's him. But I have more money at the end of this year than I had last year when I did less tithing. And so I'm only bringing this up because that's the strength of Deuteronomy 26 is that you actually have to confess and declare that you did not do. That's making a vow right there in front of the priests and everything. I've not messed with this. It's very powerful. Okay, now I'm not saying now all of you need to come to me and do that. I don't have time for that, okay? Some of you that have been doing it, that's fine. Please don't everybody start doing it. But whatever you do, you should have that intent in what you're doing. You should be declaring before him when you go to the box, I've not messed with this. Because it's not about me, I don't care. Right? Because it's not, I'm not responsible for what you do with that or not. So when I say I don't care, meaning it's not mine, it's his. Now, he's going to give it to me to do something with, but until he gives it to me, it's between you and him. So what you did, whether you did it right or anything else, is really just between you and him. So you might want to make it one of those things. Maybe we'll take these verses and put it on a card by the box so somebody could read that if they want before they put the money in the box. Well, you can make the declaration for yourself just quietly to yourself. Would that make sense? Would that help a little bit? All right. because it's between you and him. All right, it's between you and him. All right, and that's only for tithes, not for offerings. Offerings is just coming out of your heart, okay? All right, live stream.
Okay, and Rabbi, I guess we need to correct, or Gary and I need to correct, your walk in his ways was four parts.
Was four parts, thank you.
Yes, sir.
I only did one three-part teaching, and that was good and trustworthy servant. So that's why it's easy for me. I'm thinking, I didn't do anything else that was three parts. All right.
Okay. Allison W.
Oh, except on the Millennium Kingdom was three parts. Sorry, those two. Look, Shammah Steve caught me right away with that. Those are the only two that I can think of, okay? Well, I keep thinking of Millennium Kingdom as four parts because people keep teasing me when it's part four coming, so I forget that it's only, three. Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. Allison W. says, does Ephesians,
easy for you to say.
Yeah. 2:10 relate to Jeremiah 18, verses 1 through 6.
Okay, first of all, when people make comments, please limit them to, does this one verse match that one verse? Okay, because I'm not going to necessarily have time to read six verses, but this is relatively short. It's talking about the potter's house and the vessel that he made out of clay was ruined in the hand of the potter, so he made it to another vessel, so it seemed good to the potter to do. Then the word of Yahweh came saying, O house of Israel, am I not able to do with you as this potter? Yes, I would say that that is talking about some similar things. Okay?
Francis Clayton and Ephesians 2:15, the same as the is Ephesians 2:15 the same as the dogmas of Colossians 2:14? I believe it is. If not, could you please explain?
No. Okay, 2:14 is talking about, yes, I guess from the idea of man-made. But the idea, look, the dogmas here says, having blotted out the certificate of debt against us, okay? So it's saying is that the rap sheet was set, you know, was set. This is all the things you did in your life that you deserve death for. I mean, if they put somebody on a stake, if they crucified them, they did nail a parchment there with them that you could read saying, this guy right here did this, this, and this, and that's why he's up here. Okay? And so that's why for Yeshua, it simply said, here's Yeshua, King of the Jews. Because really, the only thing, I guess, that they thought he claimed was that he was King of the Jews, which actually he never claimed that. But this is what they were claiming for him. Okay? And so, you know, what it says here again, this idea of dogmas, I don't know what the Greek is under there, what the Hebrew would be under there, having blotted out the certificate of death against us by the dogmas which stood against us. Now, in this case, the dogmas really could be talking about the Torah. You had a certificate of debt because of breaking Torah. So here it could be really talking about the Torah. Because you had all these things that are now against you because you broke all these things. You committed adultery, you stole, you were a false witness, you didn't give fair wage, whatever it is that you did. And so that was a certificate of debt. But a certificate of debt, though, is like your rap sheet, so to speak. This is a list of all the things that you did that deserve death. All right, next.
Pete and Brenda Lamb, Ephesians 1, verse 4. What is the distinction between being set apart and being blameless? Are we rendered blameless by having the stain of our sin removed by Yeshua's blood?
Okay, so what is set apart? It means that you are distinguishably different in a way that's open and discernible, and more importantly, that you were dedicated for the service of the worship of Yahweh, for some sort of service or worship of Yahweh. So you can be dedicated. Okay, let's take me for example. I think I was set apart to do this role. So that I am set apart to Yahweh to serve in this capacity. I can also do all kinds of not appropriate Torah-breaking things, right? I could do, and that would be making me blamed, not blameless. So the fact that Israel was set apart and they weren't blameless. Okay, so he says, I want you to be set apart and I want you to be blameless. So recognize that you have a purpose that is the only purpose, is a unique purpose of serving Yahweh in some capacity, and there's an expectation that then you move through life in a blameless manner the best you can, knowing that you were set apart. Okay, hopefully that answered the question for Pete.
Okay, Stephanie Henderson, chapter 2, verse 14. Rabbi, could you please clarify dumb it down for me to partition the partition of the barrier.
You have to just go back and listen. I think I explained it, you know, quite a bit. You just have to keep listening to it. Look, there is something not physical, okay, that is a barrier between people. Here he's talking on the Peshat about people, okay? Those in covenant, those not in covenant. Because in the Ephesian congregation and the Colossian and the Philippians and all of those congregations, there was a real problem between those that were born in covenant, Jews at the time, right? Because you didn't know about the Israelites. So those from Judah, which could have also included Benjamin, maybe a little bit of Levi, but the Jews and the Gentiles, who all coming together to believe in Messiah, and they were having issues in terms of fellowship and coming together and recognizing themselves as citizens, co-heirs, etc. So you find Shaul talks about this a lot. He says here at the end of Ephesians chapter 2, he says it again in, let me just find another place where he says it. Because it's in plenty of places he talks about being co-heirs and that kind of thing. If we look at Galatians 3:29, and if you are of Messiah, then you are the seed of Abraham and heirs according to the promise. Okay? So there's lots of this going on in Shaul's writings. Because there's a problem that he's addressing. They're fighting with each other. And he's trying to say, look, this barrier between you and your brother being brothers, Yeshua took that away. Stop looking at this from the wrong perspective. It's also talking on other levels about how our enmity creates a barrier between us and Elohim. So it's got multiple, you know, levels of this deal here. So anyway, go back and listen to it a few times. If you still have a problem, call us and we'll try to walk you through it. Okay? Anybody else?
Michael Hubbard says, Rabbi, is the partition at any way referring to the veil that was torn into at Messiah's crucifixion, giving us access to the salvation?
100% no. Look, Christianity and Messianics alike have totally just blown this deal. The veil that was torn has nothing to do with access, nothing to do with salvation, because it's being taught that this is the veil between the holy and the holy of holies. That is not the one that tore. You wouldn't be able to see that one from where he was crucified, from up there on the mountain. You wouldn't be able to see any of this stuff. There's three, I think, veils that you deal with, okay? And in these veils, the first one, the one you would have seen, that one tore. Okay? And so it had to do with access more of the Gentile into a space than access to salvation, because it was a partition that blocked certain people from moving between. It was not the veil that led to the Holy of Holies that only the Kohen HaGadol, the high priest, went into once a year. So it wasn't that veil that tore. Okay? So, of course, bad teaching leads to bad information, leads to people perpetuating the wrong information and the confusion. Okay? All right, next.
Nancy Hose is the quote-unquote one renewed man of 215, just Shaul's way of restating the quote-unquote body of Messiah spoken of in 1 Corinthians 12:12-13.
Hold on, 1 Corinthians 12. Yes, it'd be sort of the same thing. He said in verse 12, it says, for as the body is one, has many members, but all the members of that one body, being many, are one body. Also in the Messiah, for indeed one spirit, we all are immersed into one body, whether Jew or Greek, slave or free, etc., etc. Okay, so yes, same thing. Look, if you are paying enough attention, Shaul says the same thing, or I shouldn't say that. He says many of the same things to all of his congregations because they're all dealing with the same stuff. He had no expectation that he would write it to one and they'd all read it someday. So he had to tell the Corinthians the same thing he had to tell the Ephesians. At some point he told also the Colossians. I mean, you see certain things he says to everybody because they're dealing with the same stuff. Now, some of the things that they were dealing with that was more specific to the congregation, he doesn't say to all of them. Right? But this problem between Jew and Gentile and becoming the one new man, it was a problem in all of the congregations. Still is. Okay, that hasn't changed. Right? Rob?
Okay, that's it.
That's it? All right, so fantastic study today.